Tiny City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
It's deep in the heart of every boy and girl. But it's not so new. It's primitive and tribal. If you look, you can find it in Gideon's Bible.
To the ends of the earth, we're trying hard to reach. Every chance that we get, we always like to preach.
And we feel so good, it never fails to please us when we spread the word of the one and only Jesus.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 147. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I am Peter Maverick.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I am so happy that my wardrobe is shifting.
Your wardrobe is shifting?
My wardrobe is shifting. It's moving to the fall colors and
I love that.
Soft fabrics. And, you know, I love turtlenecks so much.
Do you?
I love, because I feel like they're hugging me all day long. They're
I don't like turtlenecks. I
like
scarves.
Dickies, too.
I like dickies. You're so wrong. Mm.
You like scarves?
I do. I like to have scarves on
wrapped
in the winters.
Wrapped mm-hmm. around you. You know
like
what I did the
scarves.
Other day?
What?
I did a Radio Peter. It's been a long time since I did a Radio
yeah?
Peter.
I have to download it.
So it was just like
or
me,
I have to open my iTunes, because then you'd be in there.
My iTunes.
Along with all the comments that these fabulous listeners are leaving us, right, in iTunes. We love you. Hey, you know what is? I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to listen
Yay.
To your turtlenecky
right.
Radio Peter.
Oh, it's really fascinating because I went to see the new Ang Lee movie. I went to see it. Richard and I will talk about this later on in the month when we talk about our
the
little
Lust
show.
Caution. What's it called? Is that
yeah,
what it's called?
Lust Caution. Fucking phenomenal. And it clicked in my mind with like me and relationships and some weird stuff. So
really?
Check it out. It's really good. I'm not just tooting my own horn, because if I could toot my own horn, I wouldn't be on this show. I'd just be tooting my own horn all day. But it's really, really really a great movie to begin with, and it's a fun little show I did, so yeah.
Excellent. Well, I have to, you know, we had Neil Paris on last show, and so I'm really feeling this new surge, and but I'm also supposed to be cleaning up my life and clearing out all these old things and
I cleared
old
out a lot of old things last
old,
week.
And all this old stuff. Well,
I pooped them all out.
So I have to go back and talk about something I wanted to talk about in the last show, but we just knew that we were going to talk to Neil for so long. I had to save something because this is not going to be a short conversation. So is there a soapbox? And I'm going to be on it now. Because we run a soapbox, you know, about the politics and all of that. And hope everybody...
We kind of have a gay milk crate. I think
we
that's
kind of have a gay milk crate. Yeah, exactly. But I went this past weekend to go see Lucy Lawless in concert at Buddy Guy's, you know.
Lucy Rorish.
And she looked fabulous.
Of course.
And
was she
very crowded. She was blonde. And she sang very well. Her band was really good. She sang better than I thought she was going to sing. That was a positive. And but I had a good time, you know. I actually ended up going solo. I had a friend that was going to go with me, and she had to bow out. And then I called a few other people, and they weren't able to go. And so I was like, I was not able to go to the convention. And plus, I just wasn't really, I would have been able to rush around and try to get there, but I knew that was really an opportunity for the fans and people to take all these pictures. And
you're
blah,
not
blah.
That kind of geek. It's okay.
I just
you
couldn't
can admit
do that.
That.
I just couldn't. I couldn't kill myself to get there and do that. So, you know, I'm talking to the publicist and the people that, you know, set up the great interview. And we had such a great interview with Lucy. And I was like, you know, I'd really love to meet Lucy after the show. or meet Lucy while she's in town. And they were like, you know, well, just, you know, I said, I think I'm going to come to the convention because I thought maybe that would be easier. Mm-hmm. And they kept saying, you know, well, why don't you come to the concert? Come to the concert. We'll put tickets back for you for the concert. And I was like, all right, all right, all right. I'll come to the concert. I come to the concert. Everybody is very nice, you know, that I met before the show and everything. And, you know, and so, you know, somewhere through the concert, you know, I said, you know, I'd love to go back and meet Lucy after the show. And you know, just be really, really fun. We had a great interview. And, you know, so they were like, you know, come back up here, you know, later on. I was like, okay, okay, okay. So I walk up later on and they look at me and they say, we really don't think it's going to happen. And I was like, really? And they were like, no, we just don't think it's going to happen.
What?
And so I said, okay.
Oh, no, and bitch. Don't you know who I am?
That's
Ooh,
right. And then.
I'd have got no ghetto.
And I got a podcast.
I'd have got no ghetto.
And then I said, well, let me ask this other person, which, you know, maybe, you know, who is really maybe more in charge. And
where is your manager? Bring me your superior now.
I went to this other person. I'm not going to name names because it's not about the bad blood. This is about disappointment in its full entirety. So I went up to this other person and I said, you know, and there were a lot of fans around, and I didn't want to put them in an awkward position. So I said, you know, no, this might be awkward and I can wait around, but I'd really like to go back and meet Lucy after doing the interview and, you know, and just the whole Xena Live thing. It'd be really fantastic mm-hmm. to meet her. And she said, totally nonplussed. It's just not going to happen. And I was like, this is what I said. I was like, seriously? I was like, really? And she was like, yeah, it's just not going to happen. And I said, would you just go back and tell Lucy that I'm here?
Right.
And if she says she doesn't want to meet me, then I will go fine, you
sure.
know, because she was like, you know, she's really tired and I'm not supposed to send anybody back. Even, I mean, maybe if her mom was here, but other than that, I'm not, I've got rules to send nobody back. And what I know today and why I stayed totally calm was because I know Lucy, we have it on tape, was like, talk to this person, you know, I'll see you at the show. You know, and I didn't come back at her with, I didn't get out my can of whoop ass.
Okay.
Just went,
so,
you know,
bitch,
what?
Let me tell you about yourself. Right.
I wanted to go, you know what? Cherry Jones, Tony Award winning actress,
Hello.
Does a 3-hour play of which she won a freaking Tony Award for. Mm-hmm. And I went back and had a cocktail with her afterward.
Right.
You know, Betty Buckley, multi Grammy Award winning, mm-hmm. Tony Award winning singing actress, sang with the Chicago Symphony. And I went back
right.
and met her because I had interviewed
exactly.
her well and promoted her well.
Exactly.
You know, this is what happens. And, you know, I am grateful. I'm grateful for the people that I have gotten to meet.
Mm-hmm.
I am grateful for the interview with Lucy. That was fantastic. I had many, many Xena Live fans who recognized me, of course, were very kind and very sweet. If James ever finds this queer cast from Minneapolis, was very sweet to me. He was like, oh my God, you're Amy Feeney. He was like, I came down to Minneapolis for this and I came back for both Xenas. And he was telling all his friends. It was very, very, very sweet. And I saw many other, you know, diehard Xena Live fans who were very, very sweet. I mean, honestly, as I was driving away, like a row of them waiting for her at the stage door, like screamed at me from the car, like about 10 or 12 of them. And you know, and a lot of fans there. I mean, I'm telling you, like over 10 people, more than 15 said something to me. And then more than 10 said, we loved the interview in the paper and on the podcast. And most
wonderful.
Of them had listened and they said, you know, we were so glad what you asked her and the things you talked about and that she turned the tables and asked mm-hmm. you a question. And, so if we got new listeners out of you guys, this was totally worth mm-hmm. it. And we love you. But I just have to tell you that it was one of the more shocking, jaw-dropping moments in my ego and my career. And honestly, it didn't shatter my ego because I don't have anything tied up with the woman who said I couldn't see her.
Right.
You know, but what it was just that moment of where I went, okay, I have a couple of ways I can handle this. I could actually be a total raving bitch, which
yeah,
I'm
no,
not going to be.
No,
or I can just go, you know what? And I said, my final statement was, I am really disappointed. And this is really sad that after, you know, we did this interview, we talked to her, and after my history with the show over the past 7 or 8 years, that, you know, you won't even tell her that I'm here to say, right. you know, would she want to see me? And if she had said no, I would have gone, absolutely. Maybe she's blown out, you know, maybe she's, but I am a theater person and I've done some big shows and I've had some big weekends and I did Xena, you know, our production of Xena, which was pretty physical. And, you know, and I just know that it's just so bizarre. So I said, you know what? I guess I'm just going to go to LA and I'm just going to schedule a face-to-face interview and that's how I'll meet her. And she's like, maybe you should do that. And I was like, yeah, but I should just do it when we're sitting here in the same four walls.
Here, why don't you stick this jalapeno up here?
It's so insane.
Yeah, I know. Well, here's the thing though. Okay. So we're going to promise each other right now that when we get that famous.
Yeah.
We're not going to ever be like that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so not going to. I wasn't like that with Xena.
Well, let me resend the statement. I'm not going to hire somebody like that.
No, I'm not going to hire somebody. I don't even know if she hired this person, but that was just the person that was the between person. But you know what's interesting is that, you know, it was really important. And Lucy has a lot of access to her fans. I mean, she stood and made $10,000 on Saturday for the United Way, the thing she told us about by taking pictures with people. So let me just say, this has nothing to do with Lucy at all. But it was just, you know, I'm just sharing a moment in my life and that's what I'm sharing. And I've had many great moments. So this is just a blip on the radar screen, but my father and mother called me and they listen to our podcast from time to time. My mother left me this message, on Monday and she said, Amy, she said, I want to know, we listened, your daddy and I sat down and listened to your podcast.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, what did I say in that podcast? I know, what'd you say? And they were like, and we were listening to your Lucy Lawless podcast and we know the show is this weekend and we just wondered if you got to meet her. Because we were sure that would probably mean a lot to you. And my mother said, and you know, after listening to the podcast, we know how much now you really like her. And it was so cute. And I had to call my mom and dad and, you know, my dad got on the phone. I was like, no, I didn't get to meet her. And I told her the whole story. And my dad said, well, you know what? You're always welcome backstage with us. And it was so cute. But it's just so funny. My parents are, you know, because I had my first gay aha moment with my father. Like I had come out to him and I was in my home in Tennessee and Xena came on the television. This was a year before I created the first Xena Live. And, my father was walking through the house, my brother with the remote control always. He's so flip happy. It's like flipping through the channels. I was like, stop. I want to watch this. And he was like, my dad said, you like Xena? I said, yeah, dad, we should have the folks on this podcast.
We should.
I said, yeah, dad, I like Xena. And he was like, well, I like Xena. I like Xena the way you don't like Xena. Well, maybe you like her the way I like her. And that was the first time my dad ever had like a simpatico gay moment. And it was over Xena Warrior Princess. So
the power.
So the power, the passion, the danger. Mm-hmm. She's brought me together with many aspects of my life. But for some reason, Creation Entertainment kept me curtailed from the moment that will be. My dad said to me too on the phone, he goes, doesn't that woman know that you're the gay Larry King?
Oh my God.
And
I
said,
love that.
Having gotten a GLAAD award right after Larry King with Les by Gay Radio in Washington, D.C., I'm sure they don't know that actually, Dad.
I would have ripped that bitch to shreds.
I know you would have. But see, once again, Neil Paris saying that would have been your aggressive energy. And I just couldn't do it because I didn't want, I was just like, it's just not supposed to happen right now. And I don't need to be turned into ugly to make it happen.
Wow.
That's how I live my life today.
So next time you go to Buddy Guys, if there's somebody you want to see, you find one of those really cute bouncers and you blink your eyes really wide because you're a gorgeous woman and you.
Oh, Buddy Guys. I could have gotten anything I wanted from Buddy Guys. It was just.
You could have gotten honey.
It wasn't a Buddy Guys person. It was a Creation Entertainment person. It was the people running the convention.
Buddy Guys. Oh, I have to go do this. Well, I'm so sad you didn't get to see her.
I am too.
That blows.
So Xena fans, if you want to make a comment on this about how much that blows, you know,
call
I'm
Lucy.
Sure they just think like, well, I couldn't see her either. So, you know, it was.
They're like, fuck you. We want to see her too.
I got to talk to her for 30 minutes. So I am not ungrateful, folks. I'm just telling you, it don't normally go down like that. I am telling you, I'm trying to think if there's anybody that I've requested to meet that I haven't gotten to meet. I don't request everybody. I mean, that's the thing. Like sometimes people give me tickets to their shows or tickets to their event or whatever. And I go and I'm grateful for just that. But there are definitely a few people. I mean, in the past 2 years, Jerry Jones and Betty Buckley, I've met.
I'm trying to think
of whom else we've met.
It depends.
I've met Margaret Cho, but I've, hosted and introduced her at a number of events and things like that.
Yeah, I don't, for a lot of reasons though, I like to keep the mystery. I like to keep their character intact. I like to keep that person over there. I just don't, you know, pretty much with the exception of Anderson Cooper, honest to God, all the famous people I think I've ever wanted to meet, I've kind of met.
Yeah.
I would love to meet Margaret Thatcher.
I'd like to meet Helen Mirren. If this happens with Helen Mirren and I am 2-0,
that's when the claws
come out.
Like
the Cubs game, right. Like 1-2-3, down, you're out.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's a weird thing because I know that like if I'm only going to have like a half an hour with somebody, I'd rather spend it like interviewing them than.
And honestly, I'm much happier to have met, to talk to her for 30 minutes than to shake her hand and go, hey, I created Zena Live and hey, I think you're great and it's lovely to meet you. And that would have been all it would have been. But I'm happier that I got to interview her for 30 minutes. I'm just saying generally with a request with that much history. We sold them a lot of tickets. I mean, let's just put it for date because I gave them all their suggestions on, you know, where they should advertise.
Put it right. But there you go. There you go.
But we have had some amazing experiences in the theater lately too, Peter. Peter and I went to go see The Sparrow at Apollo Theater.
To me, this is where theater is going. This is the kind of theater
Chicago theater. Happening. It just felt to me like Chicago theater.
It's not you versus them. You're in them. You know, I wrote about it the day after we went. I wrote about it on Chicagoist, and it kind of flew out the review because you have a cast of 13 people playing 25 distinct characters.
Yeah.
Some people even tripling up on roles, and through the costume and the scene and the lighting and just everything that's going on, these people really transform. I mean, one minute you're looking at a group of teenagers and the next minute you're looking at an entire room full of grieving townsfolk.
Yeah.
And they just change so flawlessly and so seamlessly. It's just this, I got the theater buzz again. It filled me up. It was that rush again. I thought, fuck yeah, this is why I love the theater so much.
It was great direction, some great performances, and just good storytelling. You know?
Even the tech was sexy. I mean, I'm a computer geek and a hardware geek, and seeing all the cool effects and crazy things they were doing would just really, really blew me away. And it wasn't anything that's... They didn't do anything technologically that was groundbreaking, nor do I think they used any theatrical devices that were groundbreaking, but for it all to come at you all at once in just such a wonderfully written piece.
Good, clean storytelling, which
very well done.
And that sounds like whatever, but I'm telling you, it's extraordinary when it happens well, and it is at the Sparrow with a house theater production with Broadway in Chicago at the Apollo Theater. Yeah. I think tickets are really cheap. I think you can get $25 tickets.
And she's got powers, kids. She's got powers. I'm just going to say that. She's got like powers above and beyond what a person has.
Yeah, it's like Carrie. Somebody said it's like Carrie meets Wicked meets Mean Girls. And I love that.
But all the positive, because Carrie did have some positive storylines, but not the dark. It wasn't dark. It wasn't dark at all. And I think that was what I thought it was going to be when I read the premise of the story, is that it was going to be very dark. And granted, there's a big tragedy that happened, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't a dark show. It was such a...
Very hopeful.
Very hopeful.
Yeah.
Very hopeful. And in fact, speaking of hopeful, I'm going to slightly tie these together. Yeah. Have you listened to Annie Lennox's new album?
Yes, I have. I really love it.
It's called Songs of Mass Destruction, but did you know, I start to finish, it was so hopeful.
Yeah.
It was so magic. It was such a beautiful expression of, look, this is all the fucked up shit, but we can really make this better and we can really do it. And that, for some reason, I tied the two stories together. I just felt in The Sparrow that it was such a whole, it ended in such a positive way, given what was going on, and her album ends in such a positive way.
Well, you know, both of them have a foot in the emotional reality of each situation. Yeah. Like, there is an emotional realism to The Sparrow, and there's an emotional realism of where we are as a world right now, and a generation right now in Annie Lennox's CD. You know, it's interesting because I get all the publicist press release, and Annie Lennox wrote a letter, and in her letter that accompanied her CD, you know, it truly was about... you know, why she wrote this CD and what she's trying to say and how she can't create art without a global consciousness anymore. And, you know, I always find her vocal quality so haunting and so hopeful and so, but so emotional at its core. It's a really fantastic CD. I mean, it's really, really, really amazing. So
it's kind of blown away.
The soundtrack of writing that review must have been interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It struck me. And there were two, because I just got her CD day before yesterday and we had seen The Sparrow, you know, last weekend. So it was interesting for it all to kind of mesh together and weave its way into my head. So yeah, it got a little.
And now we're going into all of the soundtracks of The Boys. This weekend, when you hear from Peter and I again, we will have seen Jersey Boys, the hit everybody has been anticipating now for, good God, like 9 months coming to Chicago.
Story of Frankie Valli.
Yep, we are going to downtown.
I'm taking my
Sunday
mama.
Night. Yes, and I'm taking my friend Mitchell. And then, but tonight on the show, a show that has already opened, and I have to say, equally boys that deserve their own cred, street cred. They have earned it. This is a fantastic production, Altar Boys, and we are going to be talking with one of the cast members of the Chicago production of Altar Boys. I saw this show, you know, it was here a year ago or so, downtown in a much bigger venue down at the LaSalle Bank. I heard from many people, this is the venue to see it in this lovely Drury Lane Water Tower place, which is, you know, you do a little shopping, get a little nosh, go to the play. It's
and they were
fantastic.
Actually supposed to be on the show the last time around, but the one poor little deer, he flaked. So we couldn't get him on the
show.
Well,
this cast supersonic stellar. I'll gush about it enough here later on, but Altar Boys on the show, you'll listen to some of the music from Altar Boys. And also, we've got lots of news, plus Jerry Nunn with Potter's Picks. So there's so much. It's a big, fat show. So it's okay that I didn't get to meet Lucy Lawless,
because
I get to podcast with Peter Maverick. And when we become the gay Oprah and gay Larry King duo. Well, we are the gay Larry King and gay Oprah. You can be Oprah. I'll be Larry King. It's okay.
I want to be
many wives.
I want to be jovial Oprah. I want to be Rubenesque Oprah.
Yeah.
Not this little skinny.
No, she's good right now. She's happy right now. She's happy. She's in the whole Eat, Pray, Love. If you haven't read that book, go run, walk. I've told you, you don't have to listen to Oprah telling you. she's in a really good place right now. She doesn't seem depressed anymore.
The only thing I learned from Oprah was t-shirt sheets.
T-shirt sheets. I had a pair.
From Chevy Chic.
I don't have them anymore, but I had them when she told me to get them. Like I do most things with Oprah. When she tells me to get it, I get it. It's like Pavlov's dog.
Can we get on Oprah, for Christ's sake?
I know. How do we
Please,
do
Lord.
I've been on Oprah. I just didn't talk about this.
Well, yeah,
I passed out some cards. What can I say?
We need to be on Oprah's.
Oh, the Altar Boys are with us.
1963. Picture four guys under a street lamp with a sound and a song and a dream that would rock the world. Jersey Boys, the musical phenomenon about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, is coming to Chicago. It's Broadway's greatest success story. Four blue-collar kids working their way from the streets of Newark to the heights of stardom.
I love you, baby, and if it's quite all right, I need you, baby.
The American dream never sounded better. Take the journey across the country, up the charts, and behind the music. Jersey Boys arrives here October 6th, and it's already been extended through next April. This new block of seats is on sale now, so get yours today.
Oh, what a night.
Jersey Boys, coming to the LaSalle Bank Theater. Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Your amazing skills of deception can trick a deer into thinking we're just a tree out for a walk, or a shrub having a cup of coffee.
Shrub having coffee.
Tirelessly you perfect your artistry. The squiggly black line, the blob, the slightly larger blob, all in spectacular shades of green.
Green.
Thanks to you, we look fabulous in or out of the forest with a suit that can be easily accessorized with face paint and a few twigs.
Dress to kill.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker, because when it comes to blending in, you really stand out.
Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative, hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 8th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Innovation, sensuality, and creativity will be on display as Complexions Contemporary Ballet takes the stage at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University for two nights only, November 10th and 11th. Tickets to Complexions Contemporary Ballet are available through Ticketmaster and at the Auditorium box office.
David Sedaris, one of America's most prolific humor writers, brings his wit and social criticism to the Center for Performing Arts at Governor State University in an exclusive Chicago reading Friday, October 19th at 8 o'clock. Time Out New York says, David Sedaris just may be the funniest man alive. For tickets to David Sedaris, call 708-235-2222 or visit centertickets.net.
Northlight Theater presents The Miser, a classic comedy with a contemporary twist. A cast of Chicago all-stars headlines this tale of true love between a man and his money. With forbidden romance in the air and the family treasure buried in the backyard, it's a hilarious race to see who will come out on top. For tickets to The Miser, visit northlight.org.
Remy Bumpo Theater presents Stephen Dietz Fiction. Husband and wife novelists find the foundation of their marriage shaken after reading the secrets in each other's diaries. Playing now through November 4th at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets to Fiction, call 773-871-3000 or visit remybumpo.org.
Writers Theater presents the world premiere of Evan Smith's The Savannah Disputation. Time Out Chicago raves, it's a sneak attack of religious interrogation disguised as an episode of The Golden Girls. For tickets to The Savannah Disputation at Writers Theater, log on to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
Looking Glass Theater Company presents No Child, written and performed by Nalaya Sun. A touching and funny exploration of the public school system that demonstrates with humor and compassion why not one child should be left behind. The New York Times calls it marvelous. No Child is playing now. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or lookingglasstheater.org.
Next Theater Company in Evanston presents the Chicago premiere of The Busy World is Hushed by Keith Bunin. An Episcopal priest arranges a romance between her assistant and her wayward son. Faith, love, and loss collide in this provocative love triangle. The Busy World is Hushed plays only through October 14th. Call 847-475-1875 or visit nexttheater.org for tickets.
Kinsey Six, America's favorite drag a cappella beauty shop quartet, combines rich a cappella harmonies and madcap comedy in their new smash hit Condoleezza Palooza at College of DuPage's Mackinich Arts Center, The Mac, on Saturday, October 20th at 8 o'clock. Check out the girls' website at kinsey6.com or call 630-942-4000. That's KINSEYSICKS.com.
Catchy melodies, divine moves, and gobs of hair product. Altar Boys is a hilarious, wholly inspiring musical comedy about five small-town boys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Juan, and Abraham, trying to save the world one screaming fan at a time. Altar Boys is playing now at the Drury Lane Water Tower Theater. Visit alterboyschicago.com.
Goodman Theater presents Passion Play, a hilarious, unsettling trilogy about three small towns and three politically charged epics who stage the historic Passion Play. Award-winning playwright Sarah Rule's epic exposes the thorny relationship between politics and a religion. Playing now only through October 21st. Call 312-443-3800 or go to goodmantheater.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force announced that the launch of a campaign called United ENDA, following the unprecedented response of numerous organizations who want the original Trans Inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act passed. Over 150 organizations have joined the campaign so far.
In a victory for California gays and lesbians, a court of appeals ruled that domestic partners in California will be protected from increased property taxes if one of the partners die. The law, called the Board of Equalization Rule, applied to only heterosexual spouses until now.
Georgetown University admitted that it made a mistake following an alleged hate crime. Philip Anderton Cooney, the son of a Bush family friend, allegedly attacked a man September 9th while saying anti-gay slurs. During a protest, administrators admitted its faults, such as not reporting the hate crime sooner to the university's gay organization. The university will form a group in order to change the school's GLBT policies.
PFLAG will launch a straight ally project called Straight for Equality, endorsed by Cindy Lauper. The project is a multi-year initiative designed designed to tap into the vast audience of fair-minded Americans who want to do more actively, support equality in their daily lives, but have yet to find the simple tools to effectively do so.
A military judge ruled that gay porn found on a Navy doctor's computer can be used as evidence during a trial. The doctor is on trial for allegedly secretly videotaping Naval Academy midshipmen's sexual endeavors in his home. He could lose his job under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, even if he is found innocent of the charges because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
A new study reveals that college students victimized because of their sexual orientation are more likely to show suicidal behavior. The study also revealed findings of students who identify as straight but report same-sex attraction and behavior, and found that they are 6 times more likely to attempt suicide than heterosexuals. GLBT students were found to be twice as likely to have attempted suicide than heterosexuals.
Prosecutors will seek the death penalty for the gay porn stars accused of murdering a Cobra Video porn producer Brian Cochis over a contract dispute. Harlow Quadra and Joseph Caracas are on trial for allegedly robbing and killing the producer before setting his house on fire.
The airport bathroom stall where Senator Larry Craig was busted has been fitted with a long divider to make it more difficult for sexual escapades. Other stalls in the airport have been given the same treatment.
Tappa, tappa, tappa. Amazing Race 4 winner Chip Arndt will appear in a music video to raise funds for HIV and AIDS research. The video is part of Chip's personal response to AIDS across America, and its goal is to raise $100,000 by December.
In an interesting spat between the conservative Elizabeth Hasselbeck and newcomer Whoopi Goldberg on The View about having children out of wedlock, Hasselbeck said if she was gay, she'd be pissed so many heterosexual couples who have the legal right to get married are choosing not to.
Oh, somebody staple her mouth.
I know.
New York gay nightlife king Dean Johnson, age 45, was found dead September 20th in Washington. Police won't say where his body was found. The punk icon was the lead singer of Dean and the Weenies, as well as the Velvet Mafia.
TV's Boston Legal will feature a gay storyline. This season, Denny Cranes, William Shatner's military friend, will come out during the fourth episode.
Howard K. Stern, Anna Nicole Smith's former lover and lawyer, is suing over gay claims made in a tell-all book. Stern is suing former author Rita Cosby for libel for accusing Stern of having sex with men.
And that's your Windy City Queercast news.
This is Katie Curtis, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast.
Do you feel that beat pumping, pounding through you? Do you feel that rhythm in your feet? Do you feel that beat, how it starts to move you?
Come on now, let's turn up the heat.
There is an all-guys musical that has hit Chicago, and you should run, not walk, to get tickets. Walk on water if you're capable of doing that. And I'm not talking about Jersey Boys. I'm talking about Altar Boys. It's the hilarious, endearing musical that just opened at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place. It's a perfect venue for this show. It's a musical where 5 boy band-inspired boys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Juan, and Abraham, are singing to save your soul. And it is so much fun, guys. I saw it a few days ago. I still have a smile on my face. And joining us for an inside look at the boys is Brian Crum, who plays the conflicted but fabulous Mark in the show. How are you, Brian?
I'm fantastic.
Oh, great. I have to say, first of all, congratulations. What an amazing opening night. I was there.
Thank you.
People leapt to their feet.
They have been great audiences.
Roy Leonard in the house up on stage, the voice of God.
Who I adore, by the way.
Yes, for people who don't live in Chicago, they may not.
He's so omnipresent,
he's so Chicago,
though, in the
you know?
Chicago theater scene.
Exactly.
Stuff,
the radio.
The pipes.
So I just want to ask you, how was the opening? How did you feel finally getting to that night last week?
You know, it's been a long, long, long process here with the Altar Boys. And it was nice. I was out of the show Saturday night for the first time just because I've been having some vocal problems, just being tired. But Sunday was amazing, and I was so happy to finally open the show after 4 weeks of working on it.
Yeah.
And it was great. The party afterwards was phenomenal. Our producers gave us a amazing, amazing little thing afterwards. So,
well,
yeah,
I just,
it was a great night.
You had to have felt the energy from the audience that was loving you from the very, very beginning. Tell us a little bit about the story of Altar Boys. What is the musical about?
Well, it's about these five boys that grew up in Ohio in a small town, and they just they found each other through Jesus. All together, and they formed a boy band and have been traveling the country, and the show takes place on their final night of their tour. And yeah, it's just a fun musical with lots of boys shaking their booties and singing their faces off, and yeah.
You know, it's an hour and a half where you guys don't stop. It is so high energy for all five of you, the dancing and the singing.
Like, we get about a second every once in a while where we can grab a drink of water and dab our face with the sweat that's just dripping off of us.
Honey, you were hot. You were like doing your solo and you like fling your head back and fling your head forward and the sweat was flying. It was sexy. Brian, you needed like
some tape on the front, a couple rows, like wet zone.
Yeah, no, it was hot. It was really sexy. It's not that good at the spin shower contest. Let me tell you, it's not that good. No, tell us a little bit about Mark, the character that you play.
Mark is the youngest member of Altar Boys, and he's the baby. You know, everyone is kind of takes care of him throughout the show. Some people tend to say gay, but we try to not, or at least I try to not go there completely with it, just because it's a conflicted thing, you know, with the storyline and everything. But he's very sensitive, and he's very sweet, and he's young and excited and vibrant, and yeah, he loves his brothers.
He's bedazzled, too. His outfit is bedazzled. Just, you know.
Glimmering.
He's pretty fierce.
He's pretty fierce, and he does the costumes for the rest of the band, right?
Well, Juan did the costume.
Oh, Juan did
Mark
the costume.
Mark does the choreography.
The choreography, that's it.
So Mark took the choreo, but I'm sure he handled the bedazzling.
So who are some of the other kind of the guys? What are the characteristics of the other four boys in the show?
The boys themselves or the characters?
Let's talk about the characters first, and then we'll get the behind the scenes. We'll do the like E behind the scenes true Hollywood
intimate
story
portrait
of behind
great
the boys.
So juicy. No. There's Matthew, who is the leader, the big papa of the group. There's Luke, who's kind of like the badass
hip hopper.
We have a fantastic, fantastic performer named Tyler McGee in the role, who just is unstoppable.
He's
so
amazing. Mm. He is amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
What he can do with his body is just like...
And what he looks like with his arms exposed is just a little... Wow.
My wicked friends came and saw the show, and the girls called him Arms McGee.
Oh, my Lord. I was sitting with a friend of mine who does circus stuff here, Mitchell, and he was like, holy Jesus. And I was like, I know. I would know.
There's a body on that boy.
There is a body on that boy.
It's the right show to say holy Jesus on,
too.
Yeah,
it's a totally right show.
And then we have Abraham, who's the Jew, who is played by Nick Verena, who's hilarious. And
he's so cute.
We have Juan, who's a little Latin lover.
Yeah, he's tall and sexy too, isn't he? All y'all are so cute. There's just something for everybody.
So
totally.
So when you were when you learned that sort of these roles were coming up and that the show was auditioning, do you come from a religious background, or how did you say, you know what, I'm going to get on stage and I'm going to sing about Jesus? How did you get there?
I came from a very religious background. I had one of those kind of childhoods. I was in church every Sunday. I was on the worship team, so I sang on the worship group at my church.
Where were you born?
San Diego.
Ah.
Mm.
Born and raised. So I kind of had the story of Altar Boys. I grew up and danced and sang for Jesus. I grew up doing a youth group, like a youth theater kind of, just, you know, theater for kids. And it was called CYT, which was Christian Youth Theater.
Look at that.
So I spent about 11 years with CYT. Yeah.
So it was all like the rehearsal for this show then, basically.
Exactly.
You know, I think it did. Like, subconsciously, I didn't really think about it ever, but it's when you're doing a show like this, and especially the character that I play, it's so my life story. So it was kind of, it was easy just to be that person.
Well, whoever. And you do, and I can say this, other people can go and give their own opinions, but my opinion is that one of the things about your performance is that, you know, you don't go for kind of trademark bits, and that you had a lot of interesting choices with some of the conflicted aspects of your character. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm impressed with that based on how the entire show is directed, and that, you know, it is a comedy, mm-hmm. and there are aspects of a spoof or that satire. And yet it never feels like the direction or any of the five performers are ever making fun of you know, Christian yeah. people, Catholic people, Jewish people.
I think that's what makes it so such a lovable show, is it's not offensive. And what makes it so funny is that these boys are so passionate about this thing, just their religion and their love for God. And that's kind of what makes it funny. It's just because they're so honest and real about it. And I've seen the show a couple times where I felt like they were making fun of it, and they uh-huh. were trying just a little too hard. So I wanted to make sure that I definitely didn't cross over into that world of becoming a caricature of myself or a caricature, you know,
yeah.
just to be real and honest. And that's where I kind of tried to approach.
I felt like it was across the board. I felt like every one of you nailed that tone and never skewed from it for one nanosecond. And we both, you know, a few of us actually, I knew a lot of people there that night, and that was one of the biggest comments, was that you all seemed so, as actors, seemed so passionate. You had such amazing voices, and that it all just really sold with exactly the right tone. And I think the space really helps too, that beautiful Drury Lane. You're so close. Yes. It's so great.
And we actually rehearsed at the Drury Lane Oak Brook out in Egypt.
exactly.
Way out there.
For rehearsal process. And we actually...
Where Jesus left his shoes.
What'd you say?
Where Jesus left his shoes. His
Definitely.
Sandals.
It was fun, but there was a priest that we met there one day when we were rehearsing. And he came to the show on opening night. And he came up to me, and he was very priestly and just said, "I loved the show, blah, 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 blah." And I was like, it's good to see people who are very, like, religious, obviously, just enjoy the show.
Yeah.
And you can take whatever you want from it. It can be a religious thing, or it can just be fun.
Yeah.
You can just have fun.
Yeah.
Dance around.
Brian, with a show like this, is it easier to have seen it before? Because you mentioned you'd seen the show a couple of times. Is it easier for you as an actor to have seen it, or do you prefer to be the other way, where you've never seen anything and it's all you? Which do you like better, or do you have a preference?
I do prefer, and I did this with Altar Boys, I prefer to not have an idea of what someone else has thought of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
to not have anyone else's, like, input on a character, like, put into my mind. But I did see the show before, and I always have loved the choreography and Stafford's brilliant direction. But I felt like a couple times I saw it, the character was just a little over the top with the gay mannerisms, and just a little much.
Yeah.
So that was good for me to see. So I knew what was the right amount for me to put in of, you know, flavoring it with this or flavoring it with that.
Well, and you've been doing one of the hardest things, I think, that there is to do as a performer, because you've been the swing for all of the casts of Wicked, which,
yes.
I mean, in Chicago and New York and the tour. What is that like for your brain space? Mm-hmm. Because to know all of those roles, and for people who don't do theater, maybe don't understand, like, that means, like, everybody's different track.
Everybody,
like, where do
anybody.
You exit, and where do you pick up your costume, and where do you get your spear or monkey mask, or what note do you sing?
Definitely. I started Wicked right after I turned 19. So I was fresh out of high school, and I auditioned, and I got, they're like, "You're going to be this swing." And I was like, "Okay, great. Let's do it." And I got to do the show everywhere, and I knew there was 8 different tracks in each company of males that I knew. And it's a little different everywhere. So altogether it was like 25 or 26 math tracks that I had to know. And I never had rehearsals, like, to practice before I went on. It was just like, you have to be ready all the time. And it was probably the best thing for me to start my career, is just to have this experience behind my belt.
It's like the gold card of a resume, though. Let me tell you, it's
It's the show to be in right now.
Yeah, but also being a swing in a show that big on in all different companies is huge, because they look at you and you're young and they go, wow, you know, he has the savvy to be able to do. I mean, swings, there's just nobody more valuable than a swing, a good swing, you know?
I actually got a call a couple weeks ago with another, I mean, there was no contract involved, but just for another swing, because once you're known as a swing in New York, it's hard to not work, as you know?
Yeah.
Because it's such a hard gig to do.
Yeah.
So once I had my foot in the door with that, I was getting little opportunities here and there thrown my way. So was great.
What was the craziest, like, we need you in San Francisco in 12 hours, come. What was the craziest moment?
I had a call when I was here in Chicago doing the show, and they needed me in Toronto to do when the tour was on in Toronto. And they needed me there in 2 days, but I didn't have a passport.
Oh.
So they were like, we need to get you a passport. And so I was like, I tried to call myself and like get in for a passport the next day, but they couldn't do it. So the big wigs of Wicked and on Broadway got me, like, they had to call. They were like, your appointment for your passport is here. I went the next day. I had like an hour and a half to like get all this passport stuff done. They paid for everything, and I was on a plane the next morning. So that was crazy. I was just like running around for 2 days.
Wow.
I feel like they can make anything happen.
So how much really, how many hours and how much time learning this choreography did you five guys have to spend? I mean, was it just day in, day out?
We rehearsed from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day for 3 weeks.
Wow. Y'all are in
good
shape.
We actually learned all of the choreography in 4 days, though.
Wow.
So
it's just
a majority
insane.
Of our time was spent. It's because the whole show, there's like 15 production numbers where it's pretty much five-part harmony.
Right.
So we had to learn all of our harmonies first for all the songs. And after we had that, Stafford came and taught us just like a little breakdown of what the scene work would be.
Wow.
And then we went into the choreography, and then we had to kind of incorporate them all. We didn't have a ton of time to do a lot of character, like development work and stuff like that. So it all just kind of naturally flowed into each other.
Wake up, sweat for 9 hours,
they
and then go back
shape.
To bed.
They're in physical and vocal shape. Wow. I bet. Yeah, I bet you did, and I bet you're gaining muscle at the whole time, at the same time.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty hot.
You look very hot. You're totally cute. You know what? He could totally be like Jim Ferraro's twin. I kept thinking like that, like you and Jim Ferraro's could be like little twins.
Is that good? Should I know who that is?
Jim Ferraro's, he was the gay American Idol in the first season, and we've done a lot of events with him. He's a Chicago boy.
He was in Eating
boy.
Out and Eating Out,
he
too.
Was in
is
Eating
he a
out.
Hottie?
Yeah, he's a
oh,
total
yeah.
cutie.
Totally. Okay, it's good. Totally a compliment.
Totally
okay.
a compliment.
Like, oh, no, is that good?
You should look him up. Jim Ferraro.
And actually, our Matthew, Devin, who I love very much, he lost a ton of weight, like more than any of us coming into this. And it's just like amazing to watch him just like shrink down.
Yeah, he's really great in that part, too, because he really seems like a leader, you know? He just is so, he's so commanding.
That was something that Stafford commented on a lot with him, is just the growth that he's kind of a little shy and timid at first, but he's totally a star now, like just holds everyone together as the papa.
So tell me about your big 11th hour number and give our listeners a little bit of insight, because you get to do a little bit of homages of your own to some classic songs.
That was actually a big, just that song itself was a big reason why I was like, I'm going to leave Wicked and go do this show in Chicago.
And what's the name of the song?
Epiphany.
Epiphany.
Epiphany. It's Mark's Epiphany. And, it's just this diva song that was written for a boy who sings like a girl.
Yeah.
And it's a bitch to sing every night, but it's amazing.
You are connecting with Miss Jennifer Holliday. You are connecting.
There's a little Jennifer Holliday in there. We should have a little share. You know?
You are definitely you're throwing down. I have to tell you, really, really fantastic, folks. I have to tell you, I know the show came through to the LaSalle Bank Theater a couple years ago, and I did not get to see it, but I actually was in the theater with some people who had seen both, and everybody just raved about this production. They said it's the perfect venue, it's the perfect cast. The audience was on their feet. I have already emailed many people and told them to go see this. And you know what? You can also tell people that they can bring kids.
Totally.
Because
bring
your babies, because the innuendos will fly way over their head, but there is no bad language. It is squeaky clean, and yet there is tons for the adults and a ton for the gay theater goer. So, and Brian is bringing a lot to this role. Hey, the fantastically fun Altar Boys is playing now at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place. Get your tickets now, folks. This is a perfect thing to do right now in October and November for the fall. It's running Tuesday through Sunday. For tickets, call 312-642-2000 or go to Ticketmaster.com. And you can also get more information at AltarBoys, that's with a Z, Chicago.com. And you can see, I'm sure they're going to have pictures downloaded all kinds of stuff.
Well, we actually have, I'll throw this in there, we have a MySpace, which is myspace.com/AltarBoysChicago. And they have all of our production photos. They have videos our show, with us singing and everything like that. And all the information for tickets is on there, too.
Yay. All right. Well, I have just now gushed all over everywhere. And I see a lot of theater, Brian. So people know I'm not free with it. Thank you so much for being on. Continue to have a great, great run. Everybody go check out Altar Boys at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place and go see Brian and his fabulousness.
Yay. Thank you.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.